everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipshutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, is the Mark Ronson to my Bruno Mars. Keith Caulfield, how's it going, Keith?
I'm good. Shoot. I was like, which like witty, like lyrical pun can I use from Uptown Funk? And I just couldn't think of one fast enough.
I feel like I've done the Mark Ronson to my Bruno Mars before, but you know what, man? Just like Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars, we don't stop. We don't stop at the Pop Shop Podcast. We keep going and going and going.
We are so hot.
We are so hot. Hot damn.
Hot damn.
Keith, we have a ton to cover today, as we always do. We are going to be talking about, obviously, the Hot 100. We have a new Rihanna single that came out last week that is on the Hot 100 this week. A bunch of musical phenoms launched a streaming service called Tidal. We'll talk about that. We'll be talking about the Indiana concerts. Is there a storm brewing? Never know. Give a quick One Direction Zayn update. And we'll be joined on the Pop Shop Podcast by Natalie LaRose, whose single Somebody, featuring Jeremih, actually moves into the top 10 of the Hot 100 this week. We had a great chat with her.
What fortuitous timing.
What fortuitous timing, indeed. It is actually pretty crazy because we had Natalie come in, I think, last week. And at that time, it was early last week, and the song was at number 15. And I was like, I wonder if it's going to hit the top 10 by the time this airs. Thankfully, it did. It is going to. Look at that. Hey, look at that. So, Keith, before we get started on this week's Pop Shop Podcast, quick reminder, if you like the show, subscribe to the Pop Shop Podcast on iTunes so you never miss one episode. Also, we would always appreciate if you give us a rating or review. It helps our stats immensely, thanks to those who have done it in recent weeks. And if you have any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipshutz. Keith, are you ready to rock and roll, man?
Si, senor.
All right, Uptown Funk, Hot 100's number one song. Now, the longest running number one, get this, not of the year, of the decade, man. 13 weeks at number one consecutively, I might add. And it now breaks the tie that it previously held with Blurred Lines. It's unbelievable, man. Happy Uptown Funk Day, I guess, is what this is.
Yeah, this is the 13th week at number one for Uptown Funk, and as Jason just said, is the longest running number one single of the decade, which started, of course, in 2010. So we're only, you know, halfway through the decade. There could be many more songs, probably unlikely, that will have more than 13 weeks at number one. Because in the history of the Billboard Hot 100 chart, which started in August of 1958, there have only been a whopping 10 songs to spend at least 13 weeks at number one. So that's kind of crazy. I'm just counting to make sure I didn't get that number wrong, because God help me if I got a number wrong.
No, I think it is. I think it is 10, actually. I counted yesterday.
Yep. This would be the 10th song to spend 13 weeks at number one.
And what's crazy is that it doesn't seem to be slowing down at all, right?
Not really. I mean, it actually slowed down a little bit this week, but that was because of sort of a chart anomaly. Because last week it actually had a big gain in streams. I think there was a viral video that helped it. So this week it actually has a fairly decent decline in points and overall points. Again, because this chart blends airplay data, sales data, and streaming data. You always say, yeah, yeah. I'm like, you know, the people listening at home may not know how the Hot 100 is made.
I didn't think that was worthy of an outburst.
You blend airplay, streams, and sales data, and that's how you get the Hot 100 each week. And Uptown Funk is still like a very, very healthy distance away from the number two song, which is Maroon 5 Sugar. I mean, it could still be a few more weeks before Uptown Funk falls out to number one.
And it's worth noting, and now that it's the number one Hot 100, longest running number one song of this decade, which is pretty amazing in its own right. Now we kind of shift to, could it tie or break the all-time record of 16 weeks at number one? Again, that's all-time record since the Hot 100 started in 1958, I believe. I mean, it. What do you think, Keith? Do you think it has a shot?
Well, as you said, the all-time record is 16 weeks, and that is held by Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men's One Sweet Day, which came out in 1995. It's been 16 weeks at number one. Well, you know, anything is possible. Would we have expected Uptown Funk to have been number one for this many weeks back when it first hit number one? Probably not.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of this has to do with, you know, the release schedule and what comes out. And you know, if something drops out of the sky that becomes like a massive hit, like there's some enormous superstar that, you know, if Adele suddenly drops a single next week, I think then Uptown Funk might be done at number one.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, you know, at this point a week ago, we didn't know that there was a new Rihanna single yet.
That's very true. Yeah.
When we were doing the podcast on Wednesday.
I know.
So, and then all of a sudden Rihanna drops a single. Under normal circumstances, Rihanna would be a challenge for number one. So really, we don't know. That's the beauty of the Hot 100 and the beauty of the charts. We just don't know what will happen from week to week until we actually get the chart.
It's very true. Let's actually skip over to Rihanna's new single. It is called Bitch Better Have My Money. Probably known on Top 40 Radio as Better Have My Money without the...
Is it Better Have My Money or is it Bit Better Have My Money?
I heard an edited version, and I don't know the title of the edited version, but the edited version just completely blocked out the B word.
Oh.
Anyway, it debuts at number 23 on this week's Hot 100, and you would think, like you said, Keith, you would think that, you know, new Rihanna single, it's more up-tempo than 4 or 5 seconds. Maybe this is the song that's going to plow its way to number one. But it's a little bit of an offbeat song. It's kind of more like a trap song, like Pour It Up was on her last album. I mean, yeah. She performed it at the iHeartRadio Music Awards. She's going to be presumably performing it at the Final Four concert series this weekend. So there are some media looks. But I don't know, man. Does this sound like a number one hit to you? I don't know if it does to me.
It's certainly different.
Yeah.
It's a hard-edged song. I mean, I don't know. I think she's had though sort of a track record for releasing songs that are sometimes challenging to what is considered typical fare for Top 40 Radio. Because yeah. She can do a lot of different genres of music. She can do R&B, she can do dance, she can do kind of hip-hop stuff, she can do top 40. She's all over the place. And certainly this year, you know, with 4 or 5 seconds, which was a very different look for her.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Bitch Better Have My Money is also a very, you know, kind of a 180 compared to 4 or 5 seconds. So, you know, I think she's trying to just, you know, challenge the conventional idea of what a Rihanna recording artist is supposed to sound like. And I think it could be one of those songs where the initial reaction is, whoa, and then the reaction becomes, oh, cool, yeah, Bitch Better Have My Money. And then it becomes like a thing. It becomes like a meme, you know?
Yeah.
So
I totally
agree. I don't
know.
I think it's too early to tell. I think it's too early to tell.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's definitely been a strange start to this album campaign. You have to assume that both 4 or 5 seconds and Bitch Better Have My Money are going to eventually lead to a new Rihanna album. But at the same time, a couple years ago, I remember when Diamonds was the first single to Unapologetic, and a lot of people were expecting, because the lead singles to the albums prior to Unapologetic were, you know, We Found Love and Only Girl in the World.
Like,
and
big club banger songs.
Exactly. And people heard Diamond and it was like, you know, like kind of like a mid-tempo ballad. I don't know. But again, that song...
Why is she singing so weird? She sings so affected, like, oh, wait, oh my God, Sia wrote it. Oh,
exactly.
And then there we go. So, yeah, Diamonds, and then it ended up spending 3 weeks at number one on the Hot 100 chart. So, who knows?
Who knows, indeed. Rihanna, obviously a pop culture force. We will keep an eye on that song in the coming weeks. So, Keith.
I love how every week my answer is just like, who knows? Anything can change. Who knows?
We're like, I know, we should start a new segment called like Bold Predictions. But,
Bold predictions. Rihanna may or may not go top 10. Who
oh
knows?
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Non-bold predictions.
It's like an
with
SNL
the Pop
skit.
Podcast.
Bold predictions with Jason and Key. This week we determine if Rihanna will have a top 40 hit.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what like sportscasters do, because they basically are like, I think this guy's going to win, you know, the Super Bowl in like the next 5 years. And then they're never held accountable. So like let's just make shit up, man.
It's kind of soothing when you watch like ESPN, like commentators, like, well, you know, we had really an off week last week, so who knows what he's going to do next week. Anything's possible. I don't know, you know, with the way the weather is these days. What? I mean, this is just me pulling crap out of the air as well. But it's like, well, you know, it could go one direction, but it could also go the other direction. Well, thanks.
Next time I need one of those expert
forecasts, I'll call you.
We'll get to One Direction, by the way, and the other direction. Which is insane. Before we do that, Keith, let's go back to the Hot 100 chart. And this is a segment we like to do on the Pop Shop Podcast, looking at songs that are creeping up the chart. They're not in the top 20 yet. They're not necessarily close to the top 20 yet, but we think that they could be soon enough. This is Soon to Be Hits. All right, man, we got two good ones this week. I'm going to start with Budapest by George Ezra. It moves up 14 spots on this week's Hot 100 to number 48. It was number 62. This is a song that has been slowly growing on the chart. I've been keeping an eye on it. 21-year-old British singer-songwriter. I didn't know before today that George Ezra was 21 years old. He looks older than 21, but he's just only 21. And
just a young little thing.
Just a young little thing. And the interesting thing about George Ezra is that just like Hozier last year, he performed on Saturday Night Live last week at a point where not a lot of people necessarily knew who George Ezra was. It was not a huge booking. It was a huge booking for him, but it was kind of an unexpected booking for SNL. However, you know, just like Hozier with Take Me to Church, that song became a top five hit, a smash hit, a Song of the Year nominee at the Grammys. Got to keep an eye on Budapest. The song is super catchy. And George Ezra making a name for himself very quickly. Number 48 this week could be in the top 40 before you know it. All right, Keith, what else we got, man?
So my contribution this week to the segment is a song called The Business of Emotion by Big Data. Now, you may not know this song. It's actually fairly likely you don't know the song. Because it's actually kind of a small hit right now. It's actually number 35 on the alternative songs chart, but it is the follow-up to Big Data's number one hit, Dangerous, which hit number one last August on the chart. This song, it's hard to describe. It has this really killer chorus. It has kind of this retro kind of big sound to it, where it's kind of like this retro future thing. If you were familiar with the Dangerous song, then you'll probably like this new track, which is actually a little bit more up-tempo. The guest vocalist on it is White Sea. I believe she's a female vocalist.
Yes, I love White Sea.
Oh, well, hey, there you go. Well, then you might really like this song, Jason.
I didn't know. No, I've heard this song. I didn't know it was her, though. White Sea put out an amazing solo album last year after working with M83. She worked with M83 on his past two albums, and then she finally put a solo album out. It's really, really great.
Oh, well, then there you go. Even more reason for you to check out this song. It's called The Business of Emotion. It's by Big Data. It's number 35 on the alternative songs chart this week. And you can also find it on Big Data's first full-length album, I believe, is the first full-length album. It's called 2.0. It came out last week in stores and online, and it makes its debut on some of our charts this week as well.
Very cool, man. All right, those were two good ones for Soon to Be Hits. Okay, man, we got to get to this Tidal stuff. Tidal, a new streaming service, launched on Monday with a press conference featuring a ton of huge music superstars, including Jay-Z, Beyonce, Kanye West, Nicki Minaj, Daft Punk, Jack White, Jason Aldean, Alicia Keys, Madonna, and many more. Keith, did you watch the press conference live?
I did. How could you not? It was destination viewing.
Man, it was such a weird thing. It just like we were all expecting some sort of new album to be announced,
yes,
or some, you know, and instead we got a lot of people signing like a declaration of Tidal pendants. Madonna put her leg on a desk, which is cool. The national anthem by Radiohead was playing during this whole thing, which was weird. I don't think anyone
the entire time. And for what people, you know, for those of you who don't know what Tidal is a new streaming service that Jay-Z and his partners, all these other celebrities that Jason just mentioned are all equity partners. They all have the same amount of shares, I suppose, in this company.
Yeah.
Jay-Z purchased a streaming company, I guess it was like a month ago, for something like $50 million. And
yeah, I think it was $56 million, yeah.
And that is now the new Tidal. And it is a streaming service that has no free membership level to it. You have to pay, period, and to have access to it. And they're promising lots of curated content and exclusive content and so forth. But everyone was kind of assuming that the launch of this service, because it's coming from Jay-Z and a lot of his partners are some of the biggest recording artists in the world. Well, they all are.
Yeah.
I think everyone thought there was going to be like a surprise Kanye West album, a surprise Jay-Z album, like, you know, like to really drive home the point of like, we are the artists, we are steering the ship, and look, you can only get our new album here. And that's not what happened.
And it's funny because you think about a lot of the criticism that's been lobbed toward Tidal over the past few days. The fact that, you know, it costs markedly more than something like Spotify. The catalog is not all there yet. I mean, we were playing around with it in the office, and just a band like Vampire Weekend, I think their most recent album was on Tidal, but not their first two albums, which was weird. And especially the lack of specific data attached to Tidal. I mean, it's billed as more artist friendly. We don't really have the numbers on how it's more artist friendly now.
Except that they're going to get more money, probably. I mean,
yeah, but we don't even know like how much more, or, you know, in terms of facts and figures, which is super important to something like that. We don't know how much more they're going to get at this moment. But the thing is that I feel like a lot of those, you know, and especially because the press conference was so weird when everyone signed the thing and just kind of stood around and figured it out. I think Deadmau5 even tweeted that it was awkward. I think that a lot of those kind of like poking fun at Tidal and, you know, criticizing its setup, that's all wiped out if there's a new Jay-Z Beyonce album on Tidal. Because no matter what you think, you're signing up for Tidal to hear a Jay-Z Beyonce album or a Kanye album or a Rihanna album. It's strange that for something that was obviously so packed with star power that no one really thought, hey, we want to launch this with a new album at this moment. Maybe that's coming. Maybe that's coming in the it wouldn't surprise me if that was coming actually in the next week or two. Just a new album falls out of the sky and it's on Tidal exclusively. So right. It's interesting. Keith, in terms of Billboard, what is Tidal's impact on our charts?
Well, let me give you the correctly phrased wording. We are having discussions, as we do, with all new streaming services.
Ta-da. Okay. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I have no other publicly releasable information at this point. But whenever there is a new development in how people consume music, we are always in discussions with said companies to obtain their data for use in our charts. And Tidal is no exception. I was going to add something that was kind of interesting. Pop
sure.
Justice pointed out something regarding the artist Mint Royale. Did you see this?
I did not see this, no.
Okay. So Mint Royale, who is a performing artist, tweeted a number of tweets regarding Tidal and Spotify the other day. And I'll just quickly read them. They said, last bit of Tidal stuff, but I have some facts about how much it pays labels. And I hate to admit it, but it's in their favor. I looked the other day for Tidal data in my royalties and couldn't find anything. But then I remembered the company was originally called Aspiro. Aspiro is the name of the company that Jay-Z purchased.
Yeah.
Aspiro data is on the statements that Mint Royale gets. And they say, so in January, across US and UK Aspiro streams, they paid an average of 1.55 pence per stream. So like £1.55 per stream. That isn't exactly a dollar because we're talking British pounds. The equivalent period for Spotify gives per stream an average of 0.43 pence per stream. So 1.55 versus 0.43 for Spotify. So Aspiro, now Tidal, have been paying more than three times the Spotify rate to labels. And they say, make of that what you will, as a measure of how low Tidal are starting from. Spotify totaled 58,212 streams for this particular artist in that month. Espiro was only 141. So there's just one anecdote from a verified artist,
yeah,
you know, who says that Tidal, at least right now, as Espiro, was paying more to their artists.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is an interesting story. And I feel like we're going to get more of those stories in the coming weeks as Tidal kind of establishes itself. We're going to hear...
And it makes sense. Certainly, if the only level of membership there is to Tidal is paid, then yeah. I mean,
yeah,
paid earns you more than nothing free.
And the thing is, I think that for all the shots that have been fired at Tidal in terms of how clumsy its launch may or may not have been, it is heartening to see a new streaming service that is bent upon paying artists and songwriters what they deserve to be paid. I mean, that's just common sense that they, you know, no matter what we think of Spotify or RDO or other streaming services, I mean, it's a problem when such a large faction of the artistic community is complaining about royalties and what they bring in from having their songs on Spotify. And it, you know, it's an interesting conversation. I hope that Tidal pans out. I mean, it's always good to have more options instead of fewer options, but I don't know if, you know, this is, I don't know if it's off to the right start. It's off on the right foot. And that's so important too. You don't want to have the public kind of make this snap judgment of like, oh, $19.99 a month. Oh, like this weird press conference, not the whole catalog's on Tidal. Why do I even bother paying $20 for this? So it'll be interesting.
I think a lot of this is going to depend on the faith and business acumen, the faith that the fans of these artists generate, and the business, yeah, acumen that these artists have. And when you have someone like Jay-Z, who has built businesses and built Roc Nation along with his partners in those companies, you have an artist like Beyonce, who's so trailblazing, who changed the game with her self-titled album. You have someone like Madonna or Daft Punk or Jason Aldean. All of them have forged incredible, unique careers that have really, you know, bucked trends or changed how the business is done and how they've, you know, made money, and also at the same time have had an incredible amount of artistry that people believe in. And I think that was really important to show that range of artists all on one stage together, where if you could actually lure out Daft Punk, who don't show up to stuff, if you got Daft Punk to show up in, you know, costume, you know, with their helmets on, and to stand next to Jason Aldean, and also to film a number of commercials and videos and teasers with all these different artists, they're not in this just for like the short term bang at all, I don't think. I think this is like a very long term prospect, and I think that they all sincerely believe in it.
I totally agree with you, man. And yeah, I mean, first of all, two things before we move on from Tidal.
We could talk about this all day, unfortunately, but we can't.
I know. I'm curious as to see what you guys think, the listeners, we've been talking to people all week about Tidal. What you guys think, send us a tweet right in the comment section on Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast post. We are curious as well. And also check out on Billboard.com our esteemed editor Tony Gervino actually talked to Jay-Z last week about Tidal, and it's a long Q&A. It's really interesting. Check that out on Billboard.com. We will link to that in the podcast post as well. Keith, let's move on to something very quickly that I wanted to touch upon, because this is a fascinating story to me. This whole kerfuffle in Indiana and how it's going to affect the touring industry of Indiana. I'm referring, of course, to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was signed into law, I believe, last week by Governor Mike Pence. It's earned a ton of controversy, basically, by being equated with allowing business owners to discriminate against, you know, minorities and LGBT customers in the name of religious freedom. And because of that, because this law is so controversial and a lot of people are equating it with hate law, artists are starting to cancel what's going on in Indiana. Wilco was the first major act to cancel the show because of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And the big thing going on this weekend is the Final Four, which takes place in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, I've been watching a lot of college basketball, Keith. I know you have as well. We know that the Final Four is a huge deal. And this Final Four concert series is coming up with performances by Rihanna, Imagine Dragons, Zac Brown Band, Bleachers, Passion Pit, Cole Swindell, many more. And I'm curious, man. I really don't know what's going to happen because this is such like a red hot issue and it's been all over CNN. And it'll be curious as to see, you know, if these artists either comment on it or cancel their shows or what's going on. I mean, maybe I'm like overly interested in this, but what do you think?
I think it is an incredible opportunity for any of these artists to make a statement. Certainly, some of these artists are more politically outspoken than others.
That's true.
Jack Antonoff of Bleachers, I think, is probably fairly outspoken when it comes to taking a stand on social issues. And Rihanna, I think, has in her own way, done the same. I think Imagine Dragons probably have too. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens between now and the end of the week. If anything changes in terms of legislation, if any movement has been made, if things seem to be moving towards they keep talking about clarity in the law, or if the law just gets repealed, or, I mean, I don't even know what the status of it is right now, because everything we say could also change in 24 hours by the time this posts.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, a lot of artists are taking stands. You know, there is a, what's it called? There's a growing boycott. There's Asthmatic Kitty and SC Distribution and Secretly Canadian have all banded together along with a lot of other people. Miley Cyrus has talked about it. You know, so on the one hand, you have this incredible amount of exposure that you can get as a recording artist where you perform on a widely seen television event like the Final Four. On the other hand, you have your conscience saying, should I really be going here? Should I be doing this? And I think a lot of artists have to wrestle with that. And if they can find a way to go and have their cake and eat it too, where they can perform, Rihanna can say, bitch, better have my money. And at the same time, Indiana, get your shit together. Then, maybe they'll just do that.
I just think it's an interesting thing that we're going to see develop over the next couple of days because this is coming up. I believe that the first shows are kicking off on Friday, April 3rd. And I think it's going to be a case where if one big name on this lineup cancels, say Rihanna pulls out from the Final Four performance, it's going to have a domino effect where all the other artists are going to look around, and you're right. Maybe some of them do stay in and say, you know, I committed to this, but some are going to say, you know what, this law is ridiculous and we don't agree with it and we're not going to Indiana. I mean, that's what Wilco just did. They just, you know, they just had all their tickets, their fans' tickets refunded for a show, and it'll be interesting. I mean, this is more like we don't have any kind of news to report because we're still trying to figure out what's going on as well, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. So, Keith, also worth keeping an eye on, Monday night, man, I mean, Zane is already dropping solo songs. It wasn't even him that dropped it. Zane, of course, formerly of One Direction, left One Direction last week. He had a new solo demo posted online by the UK producer Naughty Boy, who had been spotted.
Oh, that Naughty, Naughty Boy.
I know, what an apt name at this point. So, he had a song posted online. It's called I Won't Mind, and I joke that it was like, it sounds like Mumford and Zane's on Twitter. But I think that this is a totally different direction for him. Also, no pun intended for that.
All the puns.
It's pretty good.
All the puns are tended.
Song's pretty good, man. What do you think of I Won't Mind?
I liked it. He has a nice voice, as we know. It's pleasant. I like it. It hit number one, I think, on our trending 140 real-time Billboard Twitter trending 140 chart. I'm curious to know if this was shared because Zane wanted it shared, or if Naughty Boy spoke out of turn and shared this when he really shouldn't have. Anyone said? Has Naughty Boy?
Well, Zane hasn't said anything except for that one interview he did last week. But he hasn't said anything about this song. It's interesting because One Direction fans are pretty pissed at Naughty Boy. They've kind of, and especially because Louis Tomlinson.
It is Louis, right?
It is Louis. I have the word Louis in front of me, but I say Louis, but it is Louis. Louis Tomlinson tweeted at Naughty Boy saying that, you know, it was inconsiderate what he was doing. It's almost like he was bragging that he got to work with Zayn on new music. So,
well, I
who
mean,
knows, man?
What the hell? Why is it any of Louis's business?
Not really sure. I don't. That's the whole thing. And, you know, directioners out there, hit us up as well. We want to hear what you guys think. But I don't really understand what the big deal is. I guess it was just the way that Naughty Boy was treating this, at basically posting a Zayn solo demo, you know, presumably not totally with Zayn's liking.
We don't know.
With his permission. But yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. That's the speculation. We don't know what's going on in terms of what Zayn wanted out there, what One Direction fans want from Zayn's solo project, if they don't want his solo project at all, if they're still holding out hope that he rejoins One Direction.
I think it's
just weird.
There's a couple narratives here. I think one narrative is what they want you to believe. Zayn just wants to have a normal life, and he's had a really crazy life the past 5 years, so he's going to go be a normal young 20-something on his own and take some time off, period.
Yep.
Or the other narrative, Zayn wants to go and have a solo career, and he wanted to leave One Direction, and things are not going well. And so they found a nice, publicly amicable way to split off, and he was going to go a separate way. And now the wrench that has been thrown into it is, now that Zayn has perhaps completed his contractual duties to One Direction, he's like, all right, I don't need to toe the line anymore. I can do whatever I want. Naughty Boy, go ahead and put that track out.
That's the thing.
You know, I don't know. I mean, if Naughty Boy wasn't following the script and he released that and he shouldn't have, you know, then that's a problem. But he's taking the heat now for something that you would think, if you were a smart producer, you would not have released that, because then you have the fear that maybe the track doesn't ultimately come out commercially and you're not going to be on his album. And like, so why would you do that? Like, why would you sacrifice your relationship with Zayn and your reputation? Like, I don't think you would, unless he was part of it.
Well, that's the thing, is that maybe Naughty Boy, I mean, Naughty Boy is having a good week despite all the direction or hatred that he's getting toward him. He's, you know, he's a hot name right now, and he's getting, I mean, he has a top 20 hit with La 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 with Sam Smith. His song, or his album, has a ton of guest stars, and now he is kind of making his profile more well known by associating with Zayn on his first solo outing. Yeah, there we go. That's your weekly 1D post Zayn update. We're all living in a post Zayn world. So, Keith, we got to get to this interview with Natalie LaRose. Her song "Somebody" featuring Jeremiah, as we said at the top of the show, moves into the top 10 of the Hot 100 this week. Just quietly grown, and is now a top 10 hit for the singer, who had talked about her first album being discovered by Flo Rida. That's a really funny story, and working with Jeremiah and much more. Here is Natalie LaRose on the Pop Shop Podcast. Natalie LaRose, thank you so much for stopping by the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Somebody is in the top 20 of the Hot 100. It's been rising every week.
Yeah.
Have you been watching this song rise? Like, have you been, like, looking at Billboard.com and on the Hot 100? Like, oh, I wonder where it is this week.
Actually, I have.
Okay.
And it's funny because I get tweets all the time. There's websites and there's actually people that are following it closely. So I get updates a lot, too. They're like, whoa, Natalie, this is crazy. You're climbing. And my dad. My dad is on it. And he knows stuff that I don't even know that's online about me. So he's like my private investigator, and he finds out everything you can find about me on the internet.
Is he like, sees the guy that reads the comments? Like, that's what
actually
my dad
he
does.
He does? Yeah, he does. And some comments are pretty crazy. So I'm like, Dad, why are you reading that? But yeah, he reads everything, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about your friends? Have they been all about, like, texting you and blowing you up and just like, oh my God, I heard the song on the radio?
Yeah, my friends are basically all at home in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. they've been sending me videos when a song comes on in the car on the radio, and they just lip sync to it and they send it to me, which is really cute. But they're definitely so proud.
So where I'm so curious, because this song sort of, it's your debut single.
Yes.
It's with Jeremiah, who's obviously a huge name.
Yeah.
Where did this song come from? Like in terms of the writing, in terms of the production, in terms of getting Jeremiah on the song? I'm curious.
Well, I had this beat, which I thought was really, really great. And I said, I told the Flo Rida, I'm signed to his label IMG. I said, Flo, this beat is so dope. I think we should write to it. Mm-hmm. So we came together with another writer called Rook Monroe. We started writing the song. We didn't have the hook yet. We didn't have a catchy hook yet. And we were like, how can we make this really fun for people and for people to relate to and everything? And it took us a couple hours really before we came up with I Wanna Rock With Somebody. But when it came out, we were like, yes, this is it. This should be it. So I recorded the full song. It was just me at first. And we were like, it needs some extra flavor to it. Like, you know, a twist. So we were like, okay, we need a male vocal on it. And immediately almost we thought of Jeremiah, because he has his huge hit. That's like, it's been out for a while.
Yeah,
don't tell him. But it's still like everywhere. You hear it all the time. I haven't got tired of it yet. And he has this great voice that is just made for radio. So we were like, we need you. Do you like this song? We played it for him. He was at our studio, actually. And he said, yeah, it's dope. And he went in the studio in the booth. He did it like that. And he sounded great. So we were like, now the song is complete.
Wow.
Yeah.
So was there ever any consideration for Flo to actually jump on the song himself?
Well, we actually did that. We didn't do it on purpose.
Okay.
Because we wanted me to come out as my own artist.
I see.
And not like necessarily supported by Flo.
Yeah.
Which I think was a cool idea. But he did get a little cameo in the music video for like 2 seconds.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's his shout out.
Yeah.
So I read that you, a couple years ago, it was like 2011, you were at the ESPY Awards.
Yeah.
And you go up
the
to
after
Flo.
Party.
The after party. Okay. So it was the after party. And you go up to him and you're like, go up to Flo Rida and you're like, one day I'm going to work with you. So is that what happened?
Pretty much.
Okay. So like, what made you do that?
Well, as you know, I came all the way from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
You know, on my own to make it here out in the States and to live my dreams. And basically, it was pretty tough, you know, getting a foot into the music industry. Also with dancing. I was dancing and singing. So every day I was like, okay, I need to be focused. I'm on a mission.
Yeah.
And that day I was on a Flo Rida mission. I heard he was in town. He was performing. So I told myself, I just need to go up to him, take my chance. It could be a great opportunity. And it really turned out to be a great, great opportunity.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what did he say when you're like, I'm going to work with you one day?
Well, actually I had an opening line. A year before I met him, I was a dancer in his video.
Oh, no way.
But it wasn't his video. He was featuring on it.
Okay.
But we never shot the video together. He did his part in Miami and I did mine in LA. So I was like, you don't know me, but we did a music video together. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I said, it's this song. And he was like, oh, was that you? And I was like, yes. And I sing too, so I think we should work together. So I broke the ice a little bit. And that made him say, like, okay, well, come by the studio tomorrow. We're working on a new song called Wild Ones. Mm-hmm. They were working on the bridge. And he was like, maybe you can help us play your music. So that's exactly what I did. I showed him some dance videos. He loved it. And before I know it, I went on tour with him as his female lead vocalist.
That's amazing.
Yes.
What kind of advice has he given you? Because he's the kind of artist, remember when Low came out, people were like, who is Flo Rida? And then he's just accrued this, you know, mountain of hits since then. What kind of knowledge has he imparted to you?
Well, he's definitely given me the chance to view the world a little bit through his eyes, being on tour with him and experience what the life is of a superstar, really. It's so busy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I got to experience that. And even with all these hits that he has already, he'll go in the studio and stay there for day and night to finish a song, to write a new song. And I really, really admire that. He doesn't get lazy. He's super on point. He works out. He's focused, and he tells me.
I'm sorry to interrupt. How much does he work out? Because like I'm like, you know, I see that dude, and I'm like, oh my goodness, how many hours does he spend at the gym?
Yeah, I think he does it every day.
Yeah, I'm
sometimes
sure.
Sometimes we work out together.
Oh my, I feel like that must be so intimidating.
Well, he actually doesn't like working out with me because I'm pretty fit as a dancer, okay. And he doesn't want to be like. He doesn't want me to overshadow him with working out, I guess.
So, I see.
But he called me the other day. He was like, Ned, I ran 5 miles, just so you know. Like, I'm on point. So he's challenging me, like, oh, I did this.
he's trying to get you on his level,
yes.
And, you know, reach your level as well. That's so funny.
It's crazy.
So this song, somebody, like I said, it's slowly but surely climbed up our Hot 100 chart. I mean, obviously, you knew that the song was powerful. It had that hook. Did you ever foresee something like this happening where it's, you know, like what kind of expectations did you have for your debut single?
I always, you know, I was hoping it would be a huge success, but yeah. I wasn't really thinking about what Billboard position would it be in or... Like, I wasn't even there yet with my mind. And for it to happen right now is just like, it's crazy. It's crazy to see that it's just climbing on this chart. It's number one on Rhythmic. It's going here. It's going there. I'm getting to know charts that I never knew about. And I think it's amazing.
That's so cool. Have you talked to Jeremiah since the song started blowing up?
Yes, I talk to him every now and then. And I'm like, you know, I'm telling him congratulations to you too. Because, you know... We did it together,
yeah.
And he's like, you know, I'm super proud, and I was happy to be a part of the project too.
What I wanted to backtrack in terms of leaving Amsterdam, heading over to the U.S. What was the impetus for that? What made you say I want to make it here?
Well, I always had this idea when I was like about 10 years old. I was watching music videos that inspired me by Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Destiny's Child, and I was like, well, I just need to be there where that happens.
Yeah.
And I knew that was in the United States. So actually at that age, I told my parents, Mom and Dad, when I graduate school, I'm out of here. I'm going to the States and I'm going to make my dreams come true. And they were like, well, all right, you do what you got to do. They didn't really think it back then.
Yeah.
But when it actually happened, I think my mom freaked out. I didn't know about it until a year later. She was like, I didn't want to tell you, but I was scared to death for you going there alone.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to freak me out. So she was just like, she told me afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I mean, the song has taken off. You're with Republic Records now.
Yes.
I'm sure you have, how many more songs do you have kind of in the vault right now?
We have been recording a lot of songs. I already had a bunch of songs. We were recently in LA recording a bunch of new songs. I'm very excited about those songs.
Yeah.
We still have to make a pick for the EP. It's gonna come out real soon. But we're going for the best.
Okay. And any more kind of collaborations? And I'm curious because
probably.
Okay. Okay. Still narrowing it down. I'm
yes,
sure.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What kind of sound are you aiming for? I mean, you name checked some of your influences. What do you want? What kind of artist do you want to be in terms of just the sound you capture?
I want to entertain. So I want to be able to have songs that are very rhythmic. I'm a dancer. Mm-hmm. I love rhythm, and I want to be able to build a great performance around my songs. So I want to basically make performance songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah,
I mean it's something that Flo Rida does so well as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
He can get the crowd jumping. Like, I've seen it. People get crazy.
And I'm sure you've seen that and said, I want that for myself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of like a timeline, like what can we expect from you for the next like 3 months, 6 months? Like, obviously you're going to be promoting somebody a ton.
Yeah.
But is there hopefully going to be some new music in that time period? At the time period?
Definitely. Probably in a couple months, the EP will be out. So I hope I will be performing all over the country, maybe even outside the country. We're going on a promo tour in Europe next month.
Nice.
Going home. This is going to be the first time I'm going to go home since the song is out. So that's gonna be.
It's like, gonna be like the victory lap, basically. Like, you're gonna get off the plane like with your fists raised, like I did it.
Right, that's gonna be so crazy, and so yeah, definitely just performing, releasing new music. What more?
What do you expect that homecoming to be like? I mean, I can imagine it being a little emotional just because so much has happened in the past few months.
Yeah, I just hope that I get the chance to do everything that I want to do. There's a lot of radio and talk shows that have been requesting me. They all want to be the first one.
Yes, yes.
So I just hope I can give everybody the chance to, you know,
entertain.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Natalie, this has been so awesome, and congrats again.
Thank
on
you.
On Somebody. We'll be watching it closely on our charts, but it's already done so well, and yeah. Can't wait to hear more.
Thank you so much.
Very cool. Thanks again to Natalie for stopping by the Pop Shop Podcast. Somebody is such a fun spring song. It's really a really great dance song, and I mean it's been very cool watching this song grow over the past months. I guess Keith, I guess you don't know how many weeks it's been on the Hot 100 chart. I feel like it's been there forever.
I'll tell you in a second. I was just been reading Naughty Boy's tweets. Oh boy, man, oh man.
He really is a naughty boy. Like, he's living up to the name.
Natalie's song has been on the chart for 10 weeks now.
Yeah, so it's been there for 2.5 months now in the top 10. Keith, let's do it, man. It's time for your chart stat of the week.
Sounds like the Solid Gold theme.
All right.
Solid Gold. If only my chart stat of the week was about Solid Gold this week. Man, oh man, did I find the treasure trove of Solid Gold stuff on YouTube last week. I know. If you follow me on Twitter, you would have seen it. Man, oh man.
You did. I saw some of that.
You saw the GIF I made?
Oh, yes, I did.
Shaking that booty. All right, so here we go. Chart stat of the week. 40 years ago this week, Minnie Riperton hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart with Loving You. The song, with its notable whistle register vocals from Riperton, was the then 27-year-old's only top 40 hit. Her breakthrough success, though, was tragically shortly followed by very grim news. She was diagnosed with breast cancer and had a radical mastectomy within a year of hitting number one on the Hot 100. She went public with her illness, and while continuing to record and tour, she became a spokesperson for the American Cancer Society. The cancer, unfortunately, eventually took its toll on Riperton, who died on July 12, 1979, at just 31 years old. Still, her legacy lives on, not just in Loving You and in her later work, but in her daughter, Maya Rudolph, who you may have heard of. Rudolph is, of course, a former Saturday Night Live cast member and an Emmy Award nominee, and also known for her impressive singing voice, not to mention her impressions of singing divas like Beyoncé and Whitney Houston. While Rudolph has yet to chart her own Billboard hits like her mom, she actually was a touring member of The Rentals and appeared on their Seven More Minutes album, and she even has her own Prince tribute band called Princess. So there you go. 40 years ago this week, Minnie Riperton hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Loving You. I can't hit those notes.
Man.
That's why she was so
good. Aw, you did great. You did great. Thanks, man, for your chart stat of the week. All right, Keith, that is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast. You know what's cool, man? It's April. We're recording this on April 1st. I guess I didn't prank you on the show today.
No fooling. You know, we just talked about basketball for a hot second.
We didn't even talk about basketball.
No, we didn't. We just talked about Final Four, which is, I guess that's basketball.
That is indeed basketball.
I'm kidding.
But like, I'm happy, man. It's spring. The weather's getting nicer in New York. It's gonna be good. I'm actually coming out to California for Coachella in about a week and a half.
Does that mean you'll be here in the office and we can do a podcast here live?
Maybe, man. Maybe.
Oh, that maybe means no. That's what he's actually telling me right
maybe,
now.
Maybe, man. Maybe. We're gonna do something fun for Coachella this year. I can't announce it yet, but Keith, I'll tell you when we stop filming. Keith, do you have any parting words?
I do not.
All right, man. Let's go out on. What do you want? You want to do Loving You?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. That is it for the Pop Shop Podcast this week. Thanks for listening and take care.
Love and you is easy 'cause you're beautiful.